Chapter 7, Taxes, Pals, and QRPs. What is the difference between a taxidermist and a tax collector? The taxidermist takes only your skin. Mark Twain. Perfectly legal tax evasion. They say only two things in life are inevitable: death and taxes. I know I can't avoid death, but I have managed to avoid taxes. As a W-2 engineer, I pay 25 to 30% of my paycheck to taxes. Now, as a real estate investor in syndications and funds, I pay zero, legally. From 2009 to 2016, when I was just a landlord owning little rental properties, I had paper losses, or depreciation, from my rental properties that I used to offset my investment income and lower my AGI, or adjusted gross income, every year by $25,000, which lowered my taxes to 10 to 15%. This is a quick illustration of our two-trick system of the wealth elevator. Number one, better investment returns, and number two, fewer taxes. This system leads to a much faster path up the basement and the first few floors of the wealth elevator, simply because you avoid the heavy drag of taxes. When I moved into syndications as a passive investor, I paid 4% in taxes. The next year, I made some adjustments to my strategy based on great advice from other accredited passive investor connections. They told me how to manage and direct my CPA instead of finding a good CPA and having them drive the ship. From that point on, I consistently got my tax rate to zero. Even with big capital gains from selling off the majority of my rental properties for more scalable syndications, I legally avoided paying a single dime in taxes that year. Get smart about taxes. Every situation is different, but many of our clients who have large ordinary salary or business incomes can decrease their taxes by more than half their current tax amount. For most people who book a quick onboarding call, I can find $25,000 to $200,000 in tax savings their first year alone. This might be where investors see the most impact in the early stages of the wealth elevator implementation. However, without alternative investments, especially the accelerated depreciation in larger syndications, you don't collect massive amounts of passive activity losses. We'll refer to these as PALS, P-A-L-S, a form of depreciation, which is the linchpin for implementing many of the strategies I share here. Other more popular tax strategies like 401k retirement plans and creatively using business expenses such as paying your kids as employees don't move the needle as much as the methods I outline in this chapter. Accessing PALS to lower your tax rate, moving beyond 401ks and Roths, and building your own mini pensions. No matter where you are on the wealth elevator, you need to stop thinking of taxes as inevitable. You do have the power to control your tax rate. As we have outlined in previous chapters, your investment strategies change from floor to floor, and so do your tax strategies. PALS and passive income. One of the key transitions that investors make is the percentage increase in alternative investments as you transition away from traditional investments. The big reason you want alternative investments in real estate is because of the PALS, or depreciation, that come along with it. So how do PALS work? Now stay with me here. The following is simple, but not straightforward. Not many people understand this concept, and frankly, it took me a long time to finally digest it myself. Generally, you can get about 1/27th of a building's improvement cost deducted over 27 years. When I had a $350,000 house in Seattle, the land cost was $150,000, leaving the property improvement value at $200,000. I was able to deduct $6,000 a year off of that property, which was 1/27th off of $200,000, which also happened to be the amount I was profiting from that building. That meant my income on that deal was completely tax-free. The passive loss depreciation amount canceled out my passive income profit. This is a prime example of canceling out passive income. Sounds amazing, doesn't it? It gets even better when you start to invest in syndications and funds. Due to even more aggressive depreciation and bonus depreciation, which front loads the first year losses, your depreciation in the beginning of an investment often improves by as much as 10 times. As you can imagine, if you're implementing bonus depreciation or even more aggressive depreciation schedules, which is a pretty common practice by any CPA, you're able to create a huge surplus of passive losses. Then you can apply those PALs to other income in order to negate it and drive your passive income down to zero. Also, if you don't use PALs to negate passive income in that year, you can apply them where and when you need them. Saving them for a future year means you can store them until you can use them at their optimal benefit. When those PALs are stored, they are called suspended passive losses. To check up how much you have saved up in suspended passive losses, look up your form 8582 or consult your tax preparer. Of course, PALs can only help you offset or negate passive income. It's up to you to make sure that your ordinary income is becoming less and less over the years, so you become more tax efficient. Most of our high paid professionals and business owners start with the majority of their money coming in as ordinary income via a W-2 day job or a form 1099. Getting paid a lot creates what we call the high friction taxpayer. A large part of your income goes directly to the government. Ordinary income? Boo. As you move up the wealth elevator, you move into alternative real estate investments, and those produce passive income. Any income categorized as passive income can be negated via accumulated PALs coming from your real estate portfolio. Therefore, you can eliminate taxes with the paper losses PALs from your investments. Yay! Additionally, one of the reasons we don't really like traditional investments is because they are categorized as portfolio income. That's treated like ordinary income and does not produce PALs. Boo! When you're on floor 1 and floor 2 and under $2.5 million net worth, you're going to need ordinary income to increase your investable assets. You're going to have to be in that high friction mode. Once they surpass $2 million of net worth, a lot of people decide that one of the two working spouses can quit their job because they have enough investments to vault into floor 3 or the penthouse level. Think about it. $2 million working at 10% a year is $200,000 a year of passive income. That's superior to a working spouse's $200,000 of ordinary income because it's taxed much more efficiently. Don't quit your day job. Here's more to salivate over. At the penthouse, when you quit your full-time job, not only does your quality of life improve, but you have less ordinary income, pushing your taxes up. That's why in the higher floors, you want you to stop working. In the basement or on floor 1, under $2.5 million net worth, you need to keep working and temporarily make a lot and pay a lot in taxes mode because you need to establish that investment base. Or as we say, you're in the growth building years. Practically speaking, as you start to implement the wealth elevator system, you'll probably start off with as little as 10% of your income coming from 10 to 20% of your portfolio in alternative investments. Don't feel bad. It's where we all start. Unless you are lucky enough to have wealthy parents, it's not efficient, but it's part of the game. Clean tax energy. I came up with a car analogy that I found particularly useful for many of my investors. In the basement of the wealth elevator, you need to focus on building your investment capital. This often requires relying on your ordinary income, which I like to compare to as a gas-guzzling truck. You make a lot of ordinary income and pay a lot of taxes. It's not really tax efficient, but you need to increase your net worth. As your alternative investment portfolio begins to outweigh your traditional investment portfolio, for example, 20%, then 50%, or even as high as 90% of your net worth, your income changes from the majority being ordinary to being passive income. During this transition stage, the analogy that I use is a Toyota Prius with its two engines, the electric and the gas motor. This stage can feel a bit awkward and not pretty, just like a Prius, which is not a very cool car. Sorry, that's okay, because the end goal is to reach the third stage, the fully electric Tesla. At this point, you have a substantial number of alternative investments generating passive income and PALs. Additionally, when you and your spouse can leave your day job, your ordinary income decreases significantly. Consequently, your percentage of passive income skyrockets within your total portfolio. Similar to how a Tesla runs cleanly on electric energy, from a tax standpoint, the majority of your income becomes passive income. you can offset a substantial portion of your tax liability. This is when you begin to experience the benefits of running clean from a tax perspective. You're negating the majority of your AGI and paying minimal tax. At this point, you are likely on the third floor of the wealth elevator or even in the penthouse. In summary, if you're a first-generation millionaire, you're going to burn a lot of dirty fossil fuels to get going. It's non-efficient, but it's part of the game. As you rise on the wealth elevator and your passive income outweighs your ordinary income, your tax rate naturally starts to go down. Those are the basics of the wealth elevator tax strategy. I have some other tricks to cover, but let's go through some tax strategies that aren't nearly as beneficial as you might think. Before I get into these tax strategies and debunking the 401ks and Roths, we talked about passive income and ordinary income. One way we describe these things is ordinary income is a different color of money. That's the dirty color. We don't want this. Boo, we don't want ordinary income. We want more passive income, just cleaner income. And the reason being is we can use the PALs, the passive activity losses that we get from investments, to offset that passive income. So just in case you missed that, maybe that analogy might work for you. The commoner's tax strategies beyond 401ks and Roths: save on taxes now, pay later in a government-labeled retirement plan. Smart? Think again. Many different retirement vehicles with supposed special tax treatment exist. 401ks, self-directed IRAs, Roths, DB, defined benefit plans, HSAs, health savings accounts, and 529 plans. These are all different kinds of qualified retirement plans, QRPs, which I will refer to as a whole. The challenge with these QRPs is that they don't eliminate tax. They just defer it. The government has created a trap where they minimize the revenue, you paying taxes to them. When you invest through a QRP, even a self-directed one, all the benefits of PALs, passive activity losses, that we've just discussed don't help your tax situation today. Instead, the PALs are trapped in your QRP and do not flow down to you personally. In that case, they can't help you with your AGI and therefore your taxes today. Why do smart investors take money out of their QRPs to invest in alternatives and invest personally? Because we see through the myth of the QRP. Too many people waste their time with inferior tax mitigation strategies because we are all misled to think QRPs are the best path forward. It's no surprise the large Wall Street companies unofficially lobbied the government to create these QRPs, most notably the 401k, as a path for the average American to funnel money into their traditional investments, essentially creating the inroads for the average American to invest in whatever large Wall Street brokerage company so that they can get the fees off of that. That leads to large corporate profits by Wall Street brokerages, but a dent in your returns. I don't like QRPs, at least not until you're on the third floor or higher, for four reasons. And I will say that this totally flies in the face of pretty much everything that people talk about in the financial independence, retire extreme world, and traditional financial wisdom out there. So if you're going to debunk your buddies out there who are hardcore about 401ks and their Roth IRA and IRAs, take notes here. So first, rising tax brackets. You actually aren't eliminating your tax burden with these QRPs. All you're doing is deferring the taxes to the future. Conventional thinking is that in your old age, you're not going to be working anymore. You're going to shrivel up and live a meager existence and be in a lower tax bracket with little to no income until you die. That might be true for most people, but for those of us on the wealth elevator, it's not the case. I see so many clients trapped in this situation. They have a huge amount, over $500,000 in their QRP. When they reach retirement age, they're forced to take it out. But because of their cash flowing investments, their AGI is very high. In fact, it might have even grown since their peak career earning years. They're in that absolute highest tax bracket when they take that money out. So they're getting hit with a higher tax rate than they would have if they took it out today. Now, if you want to skip forward, for those of you guys who are listening in the audiobook version, to the AGI chart that is in the resources. I do believe that's around page 12. You can follow along and take a look at some of the tax brackets. So just Google the current year's federal tax brackets based on adjusted gross income. Second point, taxes always rising. It's no secret that taxes are always going up. How else do you pay for all these government entitlement programs, billions of stimulus dollars, and other government bailouts? Some people even think that the US will turn into a socialist state. I don't believe that will happen in our lifetime, but I do believe that taxes are on the rise and will keep going up. That means you want to pay your taxes now, not at some future date when the government needs to harvest revenue. In a way, the 401k retirement plans are a blank check to the government. Don't let them have it. Said in a different way, the government can jack the taxes up to whatever they want. So if you're keeping your money in the 401k only to take it out later and pay the taxes then, I'd be worried at what the tax brackets look like in the future when you're doing that. Number three, middlemen. When you use QRPs, you're stuck with the cafeteria of options. Remember in high school when you weren't allowed off school premises during lunch? You were stuck with the cafeteria, which was expensive, not to mention usually gross. But as you became an upperclassman, you got an off-campus pass. You could get the hell out of there and go to McDonald's, KFC, Pizza Hut, which tasted better and cost a fraction of cafeteria food. The 401k is just like that high school cafeteria. You're working within the traditional retail investments, the Wall Street stuff for the retail investor. Commissions and hidden fees are both very high, and that ultimately comes out of your return on investment. In the alternative investment world, your returns are higher, options are wider, and your fees are lower, since you're cutting out the middlemen. But as we mentioned earlier, this is the reason why a lot of these big Wall Street companies want the mindset out there of people staying within this cafeteria of options that they control and supply. Number four, no passive losses. This final point trumps the other three combined. Due to the tax strategies we've covered earlier, QRPs trap your PALs in a vacuum. You can't use them on your tax return and get the benefit today. And today is where you need the most tax relief. You want to net more money and invest it to realize compounding gains. I have a client who makes $600,000 a year. She brings those passive losses from her investment and drives her income down to $200,000 a year. That saves her $150,000 to $200,000 a year. Now, if she was investing in those same alternative investments within her QRP, she wouldn't be able to do that, and she would have to pay the government that $150,000, $200,000. Let's think outside the box of QRP. Stop playing checkers when sophisticated investors on the Wealth Elevator are playing chess. The Wealth Elevator strategies contrast with what we've all been taught, and that's a good thing. It's essential to approach these ideals with an open mind and analyze them based on the foundation of what we've discussed. Ultimately, you should make your own decisions, informed by this new knowledge. But whatever you do, don't take the financial advice of the masses. It's either benefiting a corporate or government interest or catering to the individuals in the basement of the Wealth Elevator. By the time you reach the penthouse, it may be time to start thinking about funding your QRP because you have satisfied your cash flow today. Until then, think twice about contributing to any QRP. Create mini pensions. I know, the concept we're exploring here challenges conventional wisdom. We are all taught that you should save money for retirement by amassing a large pile of cash and living off its remains in your golden years. In retirement, you need to convert your pile of cash into consistent cash flow. Ideally, you do that not just by eating that pile, but by eating the cash flow that pile creates. When you do that, the pile can keep growing indefinitely to pass on to future generations or to simply counteract inflation. This is what we are all taught, but the one pile is flawed logic. You never want to rely on one source of income, even the so-called diversified pool of traditional investments. Tailor your mini pension. I'm happy to support you in creating your mini pension strategy. Join our HUI for a complimentary coaching session. Join me via the form at thewealthelevator.com/club. On the Wealth Elevator, the key realization is to begin with the end in mind, by creating cash flow streams, not at the end, but now. and establishing multiple sources of income, almost like having several mini pensions. What's intriguing with this approach is that it can and should be initiated while you're still young and actively earning income by not relying on or spending these cash flow streams to put food on the table today. You allow the growth to accumulate and create more mini pension babies, contrary to the traditional approach of prioritizing QRPs, especially 401ks and IRAs. The wealth elevator methodology advocates filling up your today cash flow bucket as your primary focus. This means generating sufficient passive cash flow, typically ranging from $10,000 to $25,000 per month, to cover your present needs. Once this goal is achieved, then it becomes logical to allocate funds towards QRPs, then nonprofit entities, which will be discussed later in the Penthouse chapters. Considering that these resources may not be required during your lifetime and can be passed on to future generations. The golden hamster wheel. Using these strategies, you can create a golden hamster wheel of never having to pay taxes. To stay on this hamster wheel, your goal is for your losses to exceed your passive income you pull out every month. Especially when you're focused on growing your equity, you want to make sure that the monthly cash flow you pull out is less than the amount of passive losses you rack up. For example, our average client pulls out $25,000 in monthly cash flow or $300,000 per year. They typically have $4 million invested with $3 million in losses. The $3 million in losses offset again $300,000 in annual cash flow, gives them 10 years of offsets, meaning no taxes. The trick is to grow your equity to a critical mass that's high enough to offset the amount of cash flow you need each month. If you're starting out, you might think $4 million is a lot to invest, but you grow that amount over time. If you have $1 million invested, you might double that in 5 or 6 years to $2 million, then double that again 5 years later to $4 million. Of course, most people do not invest $1 million to start, so you may need some time to reach $1 million invested. If you're just starting out, you want to increase your portfolio percentage of alternative investments as quickly as possible. I see a lot of people start conservatively with just 10 to 20% of their net worth in alternative investments, then slowly increase to 40 to 60%. But the only way to get your net worth to $2 million quickly is by putting 50% or more of your investments in alternative investments or by having a salary or business income of $500,000 or more. Obviously, each person's situation is unique. That's why I like to chat with each person we work with to offer a high-level game plan for their wealth elevator journey. Hit me up at thewealthelevator.com/club. Once you get out of the QRP fallacy and get pals working for you, you are able to drive down your taxes so you have more money to invest. In the next chapter, we'll look at tax mitigation strategies for every floor of the wealth elevator. Going back to that last section before we tie up this chapter, I did want to dig into a little bit more in detail of obviously what we're saying here is you have to increase the amount of money that you would feel more comfortable putting in the beginning to get on this escalator or elevator of wealth building. Me personally, I went really heavy into investing in alternative investments very early. I would probably say by the time I was in my mid-20s, I was already at least 80% of my net worth into alternative investments. And then 10 years in, I believe that was the time when I pulled all my 401ks and Roth IRAs and put it to alternative investments. And that was me coming from a guy with not a huge phenomenal salary. Now, for those of you folks who make a higher income level and already coming at this with a higher net worth, you're going to get there a lot easier. But there needs to be a certain amount of percentage of your assets allocated to these alternative investments. And I think that's where every situation is unique. The other section I wanted to tie up was the QRP implementation. In contrast to what we're normally taught, where again, normally they teach us to fund our 401ks and IRAs and Roth IRAs first. We're saying here in the wealth elevator method is to get your cash flow today bucket filled up anywhere from $10,000 to $25,000 of passive cash flow. for most people out there, getting that passive cash flow means you're going to be in that second to third floor of the wealth elevator, at least a couple million dollars net worth, maybe even $4 million net worth. At that point, once you have your cash flow today bucket for you, your spouse, your immediate family to live off of, then you start to put money into these QRP vehicles because that is considered legacy money. Legacy money means that you are not going to be spending in your lifetime. It's just going to be passed down to your kids and your kids' kids. And hopefully you're seeing it for what it is and how backwards we're all taught this. And maybe you can say it's a little selfish for getting your cash flow today bucket filled first, then your legacy bucket. But hey, when you think about it, that's the way it should be. You need to put your own oxygen mask on first, as they tell you in the airplane, if the airplane goes down. That said, a lot of people coming in that I talk to have done it the hard way of the traditional way, where you filled up your 401ks, Roth IRAs up, and we have to think if we're going to withdraw from those to invest not through a self-directed IRA or solo 401k, but through yourself personally so you can get the passive losses now. Obviously, there's some taxes you're going to have to pay in doing that. And depending on where you are in the adjusted gross income brackets, it's going to impact people differently. And again, personal situation, personal consult, what I say there. But anyway, that's kind of what I just wanted to add a few things for that more advanced topic